It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Yeagy. So glad you're here. And today we're going to be talking gold, specifically really diving deep into gold. Our guest is the CEO of Goldcorp, one of the oldest gold and silver dealers in the market today. And he's turned over $1 billion in transactions and manages $300 million in assets for clients. And he received his degree from the Portobello Business College in Dublin. And then he began his career in finance. Now, when he returned to Ireland to put his experience in trading, risk, and financial markets at Goldman Sachs, where he used to work, to good use, his entrepreneurial drive led him to establish his own financial services firm at Goldcorp. So rather than having me tell you all about our guest, let's go ahead and welcome Stephen Flood. Stephen, welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Mark. Thank you so much for the wonderful introduction.
Thank you. And so listen, this is a crazy time. Right now, we entered a period of time where we had five banks blow up. And, a couple of them were totally out of business. And then they all got backstopped by the U.S. government. And now it's spread to Switzerland and it's spreading around the world because we've had this era of free money printing with basically no cost. And you can't have something for nothing in life. So that's going to set the stage for a chat that we're going to have about the benefits of gold, sound money, precious metals, Bitcoin, all kinds of fun stuff. So let's get into it. Let's talk about how you got started in at Goldcorp and in specifically why you chose gold to be your medium.
Well, I didn't actually choose it. My old school friend Mark had actually set up the business in Dublin, and it was off the back of his concerns about the property market in Ireland and Europe in general. And basically, he was looking at property prices increasing by 15, 20, 25% per annum. And he said, listen, this is not going to last. And he could see people around him getting rich and wealthy and confusing their success with the accident that was happening in the markets. So they were getting all full of themselves, thinking they've got the Midas touch. They just buy a property and they flip it 6 months later. They make 50%. And he could see that the lunacy that was happening, the madness of the crowds. And he kind of then continued that logic and said, well, okay, when this unwinds, it's going to get ugly. What would people need in that situation? And the answer was gold. It was always going to be gold as a safe haven investment. So he set up Goldcorp. I joined like 6 months later. I just returned from New York, recently married, and I was looking to get into a financial services firm or even start my own, and very excited to do so. And Mark needed some help, and I joined. We were 50-50 partners. We stayed that way for 17 years. And he sold out his interest about 2.5 years ago, leaving me in charge. And he's the one who really kind of turned me on to it, and we grew it together, and I've grown it since. So that's the mini story.
Okay, well, let's dive a little bit deeper into what you actually do. So you manage money, you manage assets. How do you do that? Do you take the physical delivery of gold? You have gold vaults in Singapore. I mean, how exactly does it work?
So we're basically plugged into the elite of gold producing companies. So we're talking government mints, the Royal Mint, the Perth Mint. We're talking about refiners in Switzerland, all of which are LBMA approved members. And the LBMA stands for London Bullion Market Association. And it's an association that goes back quite a ways, and they control the standards of what constitutes investment grade gold. So high quality product made to high specifications and produced for investment audiences. So we only buy and sell from those companies that are LBMA approved. And recently, 2 weeks or maybe a month ago, sorry, we became ourselves an affiliate member of the LBMA, which was a huge step forward for Goldcorp. And all the team here were so excited to win that accolade, if you will. Essentially, though, we interface with them on one side, and we supply products that are high quality to investors around the world. So we have, tens of thousands of investors all around the world. They store with us, and they also ship. They also require their items to be shipped to them. So we can do both. And I'd say maybe 60% of the time they opt to have it stored, and we store in non-financial investment grade vaults, which are outside the financial system. So there's no banks involved. The bullion and the gold and silver goes on the shelf. It goes in a receptacle. It's got your account number on it as a customer, and it stays there and it gathers dust until you say otherwise. And the thinking is that they have a form of money that has no equals over time, through cultures. And what happens is they have it there. And should the wheels come off the global economic bus, this portion of their diversified portfolio really comes into its own and starts to grow in value and becomes more valuable and takes the sting out of a correction that they might be seeing elsewhere in their portfolio, in equities, property, and what else. And so the need for gold in the world today has never been greater. We're in the latter stages of an enormous monetary experiment where governments and banks have leveraged up our economies all over the world to an extreme extent. Even look at any point in history, we've never seen so much debt. And with debt, it's interest rate sensitivity is the key concept. So as interest rates rise, the debt burden becomes greater and greater and greater. And only then do you find out just how fragile balance sheets of certain banks and, I'd say, insurance companies and pension funds and government states will be seen to be. So we're only going through, I think, the early stages of a repricing of risk and a repricing of debt and interest rate sensitivity. And in those circumstances, you know, currencies fall in value, asset prices fall in value, inflation rages, and gold and silver really come into their own. And as I said, it's not about having all your eggs in one basket. It's really about having precious metals as a part of a diversified portfolio. Because when the wheels come off this bus, there will be enormous opportunities to buy really marked down assets at cut down prices. And that's really what that astute gold investor can do. They can liquidate their gold, you know, hopefully at the right time, raise cash and pick up great bargains. And that's really what it's all about.
Wow. That answer opened up a lot of stuff for me. And I was going to ask you this a little bit later down in the interview, but you brought up LBMA. And I've been hearing a lot of things on the LBMA, and I know your answer, but I'd like you to try to argue both sides. There is some talk that the LBMA basically fixes the price of gold and it makes it an unnatural market. And how would you answer that? I know you're a new member of the LBMA, so it's going to be tough for you to answer both sides, but is there any credence to that concern, and how would you handle that?
Well, when they say fix, it's not like fixes and they set out to manipulate the gold price. What the fix is kind of a liquidity event. So if you have a market that's trading certain volumes throughout the day, you might find that a big buyer or a big seller can sway the market to an extent where it causes damage. It creates a question where there are no questions. And so what they do is, and I think it's a great system conceptually, is that you know that twice a day you're going to have large volume buyers and large volume sellers coming together, and they meet in the middle through market makers who set a price that satisfies the maximum amount of volume. And that's really what the function of the fix is. And in doing so, it removes that volume from the OTC market or over the counter market, and you don't find some trade coming in and just hammering the market in some way that's unexpected. So it brings market stability. It's a very, very good way of trading large volumes. And the bullion market, remember, is incredibly large. It's you know, there's a global demand for bullion through central banks and pension funds and private investors. And so they need to have a mechanism by which to fix. In the stock market, you also have banks who will between themselves, you know, move large volumes of stocks and then print those volume trades on the tape for all to see. But you don't get to actually bid on those volumes. They happen behind the scenes, and it's an orderly way to go about your business. They have to be marked to market. They have to represent the market, and they can't be done at prices that would skew the market. But so I do think it's an important thing that the LBMA do and oversee.
So they're basically market organizers that help the market be smoothed out during those periods of rough times, which is basically, I got a background on Wall Street as well. And that's what market makers do, right? And that's what floor traders used to do back on the New York Stock Exchange. They would, in an orderly fashion, organize the bids and the asks on the assets. So that makes sense. So it's basically a market stability mechanism.
Yeah, I mean, years ago when I used to trade stocks for banks on Wall Street, we would have portfolios that need to be liquidated, and we would look and scan them, and we would scan them for names or companies where the amount that we were trading would be a material impact on the orderly trading of that stock, and we would have to treat those very, very carefully and execute those trades over time in a way that was sensible and didn't create an anomaly in the market.
Got it. All right, let's switch our talk to wealth architect stuff. You know, basically people trying to figure out how to utilize what you do and what other people do on the show to help themselves get ahead financially. So that's really what we're going to talk about here. And you know, I love gold. I love fixed assets. I love sound money. And so I want to talk about two tiers of sound money. Number one is gold is obviously the soundest money we've ever come up with as humans, right? You can't melt something else and create gold. You have to mine gold, which, you know, we'll leave this hanging out there. It doesn't have a limited supply. In other words, they're always going to find more gold if the price is high enough. I think you could justify it to be able to find more gold. And so I want to stop there and kind of talk about that. And then we'll go into the second tier, which is what happens when everything hits the fan, which doesn't sound like you're a believer of, but everything hits the fan. We lose all of our banking systems. We go to CBDCs and they don't work. And then we have basically chaos in the financial world. And you're sitting on this chunk of gold at your house. What happens then? So let's start with the first tier, which is, you know, the sound money argument. And then we'll go into like what really happens if everything goes haywire.
Yeah, I mean, like sound money, I mean, to me, I very much reference James Turk of Gold Money. He's a competitor, but he's an absolute genius. He's an absolute gentleman as well. He's written some great books, and he talks about gold being the ultimate form of money. It is actually money. Everything else is currency or a derivative of money, of gold or some other asset. And so, you know, the dollar was pegged to gold. That was what it was. You know, it was a way of trading gold via paper currency. And then they broke that connection. And what they did then is they unleashed monetization and monetary manipulation.
And doesn't that always happen, Stephen?
Yeah, always.
I mean,
always.
We peg it to gold. Everybody's happy that it's pegged to gold. And then the government steps in, they steal your gold, they depeg it. And it's always happened. So how do we know that it's not going to happen in the future? But anyway, maybe I'm interrupting your answer.
Well, we don't. It will continue to happen. And as long as people trust blindly in the state, and to me, you know, democracy dies in the dark. So if you don't participate, you don't read up and you don't involve yourself in your local politics and your national politics where possible and educate those around you, then these things happen. And so it's a sign of people being despondent and apathetic to the system. And I think I think you get what you deserve. People get the government they deserve. They get the monetary policy they deserve. And I think people have to start taking responsibility. And one way you can take responsibility is own gold for yourself and your family and your community. And I'm not saying, you know, there are a lot of people who are endless gold bugs, and they just think the only money is gold and that's all there should be. That's not the case. I actually think the banking system conceptually is fantastic. The way money should operate is really great, but the problem is the way we manage it and the people we have in control are not our friends in my view, and they don't manage it correctly. And through regulatory capture, where you have people who are involved in profiting from the system then regulating the system, and people who are regulating the system moving into those companies that profit from the system, ultimately you get what you deserve. You get a corrupted system. If the monetary system, in the case of Silicon Valley Bank, you know, it's not as if the Fed came in and pledged their, you know, or the Treasury came in and pledged government gold supplies to make whole the depositors. They pledged fiat money, paper money, that they magicked. They just created out of nothing.
They pledged fairy dust. Here you go. Here's more fairy dust.
Yeah. And it's quite sad to see, because what they're doing is they're rewriting the actual rule, the monetary rules, by doing so. They're creating precedent. They're creating a moral problem with the system, where these banks now know and investors know, you know what, it doesn't matter where I put my money and my deposits and my pension and my company money. Every bank will be saved at the end of the day. No pain. I don't have to own the decisions I make. And that goes right against the capitalist system. This is not capitalism, what we're seeing. It's corporatism. And it goes directly against everything, you know, me, and I'm a capitalist, hold dear. You know, I believe in the individual and the rights of people to determine and make decisions. And if I make a bad decision, I should feel the pain. And if I put money into SVB Bank and it got wiped out because it invested those deposits in investments that lost value, then I should feel the pain. I made that choice. I didn't read the balance sheet. I didn't look at what they were doing. And so I should get it in the neck. So it's a very, very dangerous situation what they're doing. And they're doing it not for monetary reasons or economic reasons. They're doing it for political reasons. Remember this, this is political reasons. And it's not a blue versus red question either. You know, both parties would have done the exact same thing because both parties are in hock to the system, which is Wall Street. And they all depend on these funds to get into elected. I mean, so it is an unhealthy alliance, and I don't think they've done themselves favors or anyone else a favor by doing so. So on the monetary basis, you know, what gold, and again, I quote James Turk in this probably poorly, but my understanding is that if you have gold if you have a currency that's backed by gold, what you can do is if you lose faith in the system, you can then give back your paper money and take in return gold. And in doing so, you leave the system and you are voting with that action, your faith in the system. And then the system starts to recorrect and it has to build trust again. And when it builds trust, you might hand in your gold and get paper money back that's backed by gold and use that in your economy, buying and selling goods and services faster. Because let's face it, fiat money is much easier to transact. You can do so much, much quicker than you could if it was physical gold. And therefore, it's a good thing when it comes to transactions. But the idea of opting out of the system with gold is fantastic. And I think that's whatever CBDC currencies that they decide to bring in, and I don't think we have any choice in this matter, it's going to happen. We should have a mechanism to opt out and then reset the system ourselves through our own buying behavior. I hope that answers your question.
It does, except you said the word should, and I don't think that's going to translate to will. But
in fairness, I do know, and I'm not terribly read up on this, but the Europeans in the ECB, they're looking at CBDCs. And I know one of the concepts that they're discussing is how can they empower, autonomy and confidentiality in smaller transactions. So they're not all, it doesn't seem to be all about pure control from their perspective. I don't know if that's true or not, or if it'll ever get an airing. But it was interesting that they even discussed it as a concept. I thought that was quite good.
Hey, it's Mark Yeager here to tell you about our Cash Flow Machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2 to 4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2 to 4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more. I mean, I think we're going to hear a lot of debate on it, and we're just going to have to find out who prevails, because like you said, there's no party that's on one side or the other. I think everybody benefits from the corruption in the system. And I think this is just going to be a bit more corruption in a slightly different system, and they'll spin it and tell us that it's going to be secretive or small transactions. They'll find a way to get it passed. But at the end, I think it's too much control of an authoritarian regime or sets of regimes that are going to be controlling our money. So that brings me to the next question. And I have a friend of mine that has millions of dollars worth of gold. He's got it stashed in different vaults around the world. He's got it some in Singapore. He's got some in ETFs. And, you know, he's a big believer in what's been happening with gold just in the last couple of years. now we're seeing, you know, close to record highs, and you know, we'll probably see higher as this system continues to debase. So, but what does he do if A, the government says, give us all your gold like they did in the 30s. They said, give us your gold or it's a felony to possess gold. And he wants to leave. I mean, this guy's worked really hard and he's, you know, built up his life and his business around holding gold. And now they tell him, you can't have it anymore. What happens in that situation? And it's not a situation that's never happened. It's happened throughout history. And it certainly happened in, you know, within the last 80 years in our history. What happens if he does that? Does he lose, you know, millions of dollars worth of gold? Is there a way to protect it?
Yeah. Emigrate.
Okay.
Emigrate, move. If you think that the government that has domain over your jurisdiction is that corrupt, then you should leave as soon as possible. The key is to diversify your assets into gold. So have some, you know, whatever that percentage is. Then to diversify where you have your gold, multiple jurisdictions, multiple locations, because you're not going to be able to keep all safe in every environment. There's always going to be some black swan happening somewhere. And don't be unrealistic about that. Don't keep yourself up at night. Just, you know, it's really a numbers game. You might, you know, an event might happen and something happens in the UK, and I'm not suggesting this, but something happens in the UK and they decide to rebase their currency and confiscate assets, one of which could be gold. That you might lose the value of that gold, but the gold price will go up and it will gain elsewhere where you do hold it. So you might be just flat at the end of the day. So I would say move it around. You should absolutely, sorry, in terms of the idea of confiscation, back in the 30s, the amount of people who held gold as an alternative currency was much greater than it is today.
True.
Most people, and I mean 95% of people out there, 98% of people out there, in my view, have no idea what gold is or even hold it as an investment. They might have it as jewelry, but investment grade owning of gold is so rare. I would think that the government of the day, if they wanted to rebase their currency and confiscate assets, and you know, this will happen in some places, no doubt, because currencies are all going to zero. So they will do so, but they'll probably confiscate other assets like property, pension assets. Pension assets are the easiest ones they could go after. In fact, they have already done so in some places. Mm. They put levies on pension assets. They might put a 5, 10% levy on a pension asset and force people to liquidate them down. So I don't think gold itself will be in the crosshairs because it's just such a small target market. It's not a target-rich environment for monetary resets, in my view.
That's a really interesting answer and not one that I thought you would give. But in a lot of ways, it's practical. And in some ways, it may be a little bit less practical. And I want to bring that up in the light of Bitcoin, because to me, Bitcoin is taking all of the great powers of gold and mashing them with the good powers of fiat. Like you said, easy to transact. You can't really, if you want to buy a $300,000 piece of property, it's a little bit difficult to go to the closing table with gold, especially if it's overseas. So there has to be some kind of a bridge. To me, Bitcoin is a natural bridge. It's got the scarcity. It's transmittable electronically easily. It's never been hacked, those kinds of things. And it's 14 years old. So to me, that's kind of where I think things are going. So how do gold and fiat and Bitcoin play together in the same sandbox?
Well, I've been studying Bitcoin for many, many years. And I have to put my hand up. I'm a skeptic. And I love technology and I love financial technology. You know, in previous jobs, you know, I would have been very heavily involved in financial technology. The idea of a money, the role of a bank in an economy is really interesting. If you, if I have a business and let's say I have a need for cash in order to expand or start a business, and I don't have any actual money in my wallet, but what I do is I have an asset. So I have a building, let's say. If I walk into the bank and say, I need $1 million and I pledge my building to the bank will issue me $1 million and take that asset in. Now, they don't have $1 million in actuality. What they do is in their balance sheet, their license allows them to generate cash. Right. If they have an asset to collateralize. So they take an asset in, which they owe back to me, and they issue me money, which I owe back to them, and their balance sheet is flat. Okay. So they're long a building, they're short the cash. And I'm short the building and long the cash, but the cash allows me to go and buy equipment and pay people and do stuff and take a risk. And if I don't deliver back that money, they didn't take my building and I lose. They don't. Ideally. The problem I have with Bitcoin is it's great for transactions. Like you can go buy stuff very fast. You can do the clearing system is fairly impressive, not anywhere near as good as Visa, MasterCard, for example, but in terms of transactions per second, but it's fairly impressive given it's a grassroots technology. The concept is really, really interesting. I love that, but it doesn't really allow the expansion of the monetary system where an institution can create Bitcoin, lend out, and then bring it back versus a collateralized asset. It's got some serious problems and headwinds in terms of becoming a currency. The next thing that I think it has problems with is that money is power and power is political. And there is no way in hell any government of the day, anywhere in the known world, would allow Bitcoin to usurp it in terms of allowing the little people to transact in something that they can't control in terms of interest rates and velocity and availability. So it's I think I don't know what environment a government would allow that to be, because really it's through the interest rate that they control all of our lives, you know, in terms of how we spend, inflation targeting, all the way through. So gold again is not really conducive to transactions either, and it can't be created out of nothing. It has the same problems, and it's even less mobile than Bitcoin. But it does have something Bitcoin doesn't have, and that is enormous history and longevity.
Yes, it does.
And it has a tangible thing that doesn't require a network to work. And I mean, I know people talk about Bitcoin being, you know, held on a USB stick, but ultimately you need a network and you need a system. Whereas, you know, a gold bar slammed on the table is going to do all the talking you need. Whereas Bitcoin and a USB may not. The other thing about Bitcoin is that you also own the history of that token. So if you own it and then suddenly the feds turn up at your door and say, yeah, that Bitcoin you have, you know what, we've actually tracked that back when we can, because it's immutable in the ledger. We could track it back to an illegal act where it was stolen or used or something nefariously. And you may not actually have legal ownership of that in the courts because it was stolen from somebody else. And with cash, it's washed through the system. You don't know where it's been. With gold, similarly. With Bitcoin, you are connected to all of its history, good and bad. And I don't know any way you can actually know what that history was and hold it and then sell it on to somebody. So it's they're very unique. They're very interesting. We could sit here and nerd it out all evening.
Sure.
And it's fascinating, but it's I love the fact that Bitcoin came grassroots, and it tries to answer an awful lot of questions that gold has been answering for a long time. Bitcoin's rise has made a huge case for gold, and has had people ask questions about the monetary system, and that is all good in my book.
Yeah, I do think I don't think it's a digital situation where one succeeds and the other fails. That's why I say I think there's going to be gold, silver, property, which I think Bitcoin is a property, and fiat, all working together. So I think it's going to be an interesting, you know, they all have benefits. But yeah, you brought up some really good points about the crime and those kinds of things and government making it confiscatable, much like it has been in gold. So that's interesting. So I'm going to have to sit with that for a bit because sure. I always love to get interesting perspectives from experts like you. So thank you for that.
You're very kind.
Yeah. So let's make a quick transition here to talking about how you help people, and specifically, you know, what you can do for people that are looking to diversify or increase their exposure to gold.
We are, I don't say this lightly, we're obsessed with our customers. We absolutely kick the door down, blow the lights out in order to meet their needs. Where we don't think there's a fit, we don't do any business with them. You know, if they're vulnerable or anything like that, we won't. We don't sell products on the promise of returns. We don't know what the future holds. We just think that gold really works as a contingent value. That is, if things happen in the marketplace that we didn't expect, you'll be glad you had something like gold in there in your portfolio. And that's its role, is to calm you down as an investor, not to make you rich, not to make you poor, just to bring some sort of sense to the table so you're not panicking. And I think that's its role, 10, 20%, whatever you think is appropriate. And we think that's a perfectly fine sandbox for us to play in. And then now it's all about how do we get the most valuable, highest quality gold to our clients in the safest way possible. And so we only work as a really good quality product. We don't missell it. We don't sell high premium product where you have a lot of people out in the television stations advertising, and they're heavily endorsed by certain political people and names, and they're paying huge amounts of money. Ask yourself, in a low margin business, which is what we where we are, how on earth do they pay for that? You're paying for it as a customer. You're paying outrageous premiums and prices, and you're probably being sold, they're doing kind of loss leader business in order to bait and switch. And you have to be very careful about the companies you deal with. Our company, we have, I'm going to say we have 3,000 five-star reviews, every one of them legitimate over the last 10, 12 years. And we're an LBMA affiliate member. We're really highly regarded in our marketplace for our integrity and our honesty and our forthrightness. And we've been around for 20 years in business. And we don't mess around. We're really, really good at what we do. So how do we get the most amount of gold, the highest quality, quickly and safely into the hands of our customers and do so in a very honest and transparent way? And that's what we do.
I love it. Well, this for me has been fascinating. I find the gold business to be fascinating anyway. It's old, but it's new. And companies like you and experts like you and Mark, you know, figured out a way to take this idea and bring it to people so that it's accessible. So I thank you for that, because I'm all about more financial education, more exposure to people to be able to have different choices in their investment. So thank you for that. Is there a place that people can go and find out a little bit more about you?
Our website is goldcore.com. So you can go on there and open up an account in like, you know, 3 to 5 minutes. It's really, really easy to do so. We spend a lot of time on technology and making it simple and fast. But we also have this special website that we set up, and there's no marketing, no sales in there really. It's called goldintheusa.com. And we based that name on one of our favorite singers, Bruce Springsteen, borninTheUSA.com. So we love him and we love gold. So we put goldintheusa.com. Go on there. You can download a guide, which is basically a tip sheet of the things that you should look out for if you're looking to get into gold for the first time. It's real simple, very straightforward. You'll be able to contact us if you wish afterwards, but it'll equip you with the right questions to ask, and it'll set you on your way to owning gold in a very safe and transparent way.
Well, thank you so much. I think that's a great resource, and I know we've only scratched the surface today on what gold can do. So there's definitely going to be some merit in people going and getting your tip sheet. I'm sure there's a lot more to learn. So listen, Stephen, thank you so much for your time, your wisdom. I appreciate your being on the show. So I hope to see you again soon. And everybody else who's listening and watching the Wealth Architect podcast, remember, never give up your power in your health, your wealth, or your time. See you next time, everybody. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.